The parents pay for their kid to play, enjoy themselves, and win. All three. If any of the, look, pick any one of the three. If it's off, you're going to have an issue. If the team is winning and if the kid is playing 90 minutes, but for whatever reason, he's not enjoying himself, it could be a whole host of reasons. I'm sure you've come across certain scenarios, then you have an issue. And if the kid's not playing, of course you have an issue. And if the team is not winning, but your kid is playing 90 minutes and he's the star, there's an issue. Because guess what? That parent's going to say, my kid's the best team, the best player or one of the best players. The team loses every game. I need my kid to go to a winning team now.
Do you think that's a mistake, Gary?
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the 343 podcast, where we work tirelessly to elevate the level of discourse and practitionership here in American soccer. Today, we're revisiting a topic that keeps on giving, that continues to spark debate, the winning versus development. Ah, yes. But you know, from my perspective, it's not a debate at all. It's crystal clear. However, for coaches, parents, and players, the everyday environment often presents a dichotomy between these two concepts, making it very difficult to blend them, to have them play well in concert with one another. There are significant benefits to fostering a winning culture, massive, in fact. But when, if ever, should you dial down that very human urge to win? Make no mistake, the players want to win, the coaches want to win, the clubs want to win, and if we're talking youth, yes, the parents want to win. So where does this tension of winning versus development come from? I think, in fact, I would strongly argue that much of it is driven by media narratives, by a particular culture in this country that has taken over the game. And consequently, parents, clubs, leagues, or even the federation themselves amplify this tension. And there's reasons for that too. I know most people have good intentions, I really do, and want what's best for soccer and player development. But there's also misguided notions that need to be addressed. We're diving into this topic today because one of our recent Instagram reels, posted by Benny, touched on the issue of quote-unquote winning at all costs. And this reel apparently generated a whole bunch of discussion, as you can imagine. So with that, let's get into it. We cover a lot in this episode, folks, and a lot of things that aren't really covered in your mainstream news outlets, for obvious reasons. Okay, here we go. Really quick, guys. How you can support this podcast, it's very simple. You go to 343coaching.com or 343masterclass.com. We've got coaching education programs there that are based on our very own unprecedented work in the American soccer environment, graduating a whole bunch of kids from the age of 9 up to the professional ranks. And if they didn't quite make the professional ranks, okay. Well, there's other tiers, right? There's Division I soccer. There's other college environments, and all of that work has been codified, captured on tape with the real practitioner himself, Brian Kleiben. You can see him in action, not rehearsed, not scripted, but in the actual training and game environments with these players themselves, running the activities, correcting the activities, helping the players out during the activities. You name it, it's there. It's going to catapult your coaching like nothing else in this country. And I say that with all sincerity. And parents, you want to be able to guide your kid as best as humanly possible. There's a lot of landmines in the American soccer environment. You can go to 343masterclass.com for that helping hand there. All right, everybody, here we go. Benny and I jump into winning versus development. Ooh, the taboo subject that it is. Enjoy. Take it away, Benny. What did you want to talk about?
Recently, I just posted on 343 social media. There was a clip between you and Rory O'Neill. It was from your latest podcast with him, and it sparked a lot of debate in the comments. The topic was, does winning matter in youth soccer?
So many coaches at U12 and under give a shit about winning these games. Like, I'm going to be in a tournament in a couple of days. I could care less if we win every game or lose every game. I'm worried about build out patterns and attacking patterns right now. I want to see you get in the right space, make the right move. You know, those are the only things I care about. And I bet you 95% of the coaches out there are going to want to win every one of those games. And 95% of the parents probably expect to win those games. So I think from a parent coaching perspective, it depends a little bit on how you manage your players and your parents.
So just to start with the simple question, Gary, in your view, what is the role of winning in youth soccer and how does it fit within the larger context of player development?
Yeah, the more and more experience one got, or I'll speak for myself, you start looking at it from the bigger picture, but from a perspective of real experience, you know, because a lot of folks talk about the big picture and the long-term view of player development, but they're talking about it from a theoretical perspective, from a philosophy perspective, but they haven't really lived it. And there's a difference, okay? So once you've actually lived it and you've seen countless cycles of players go by from 9 years of age up to 30 years of age, and you get to see all their trajectory and you see hundreds and thousands of these players, and then you can reflect back on what their youth, quote unquote, development or trajectory was like, then you can make judgment calls from experience. So with that backdrop, I think two things. Well, man, I have way more than two things, but I'll start with two. One is that ultimately winning doesn't matter at the young ages, and it doesn't correlate necessarily where a player is going to end up long term. Okay. So great. Before everybody whips out their pom poms and hip, hip, hooray, we agree with you, Gary, you know, because that's what everybody says here in the States. Let's be a little bit more nuanced about it and caveat some things. From a coach's perspective, if you win games and a significant number of games, and that could be different for different people, it gives you breathing room from the parents and from the club to actually continue developing your team, developing your players, and working on your craft and working on your art without so much of the headache and stress that comes from either the club or more likely the parents. Because as much as parents and folks like to say, oh, winning shouldn't matter, you know, play everybody equal playing time or rotate the players for their development or don't put my son, you know, at center back, try him out at center forward. As much as the parents and everybody like to say those things, at the end of the day, the parents are the first to come complaining when the team is not winning. So it's not necessarily that it's coming from the coach's inner desire to win at all costs. It's more an incentive structure that comes from the youth soccer system here in the United States that incentivizes you to win. If you win, the parents have that metric in the back of their heads because they think that equates to development in some respect. And so that's all they really see and comprehend really in the moment. They're living week to week here. And if the team is losing, 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 the first thing that they think of most times or many times is, oh, the team is not developing. My player is not developing clearly because we lose. And so this coach must not be great. Let me start thinking about what to do about this situation myself, either taking my kid off of the team or talking to the coach or talking to the club. And all of this stuff commences a vicious cycle that where things just get worse and worse and worse and worse. So I don't know. I'll pause there, Benny, and see if you have something to reflect on.
Yeah, Gary, I think to your point about the parents are the first ones to come and complain, right, when things are going the right way. I mean, it's gotten so bad, Gary, to the point where everybody's heard this, right? The parents want to win more than the kids, right? And I was coaching a game last weekend, and this is something that I've never seen before, Gary. The refs came to my sideline before our game to tell the parents, like, look, I know you guys want to win, but please, any call that I make, I don't want to hear any comments. There's a shortage of referees because they're being constantly being abused by the parents who want to win at all costs. And you even mentioned the parents. There's been refs between the ages of 18 and 25, and they ref two games and they're quitting because they can't handle the abuse of the parents. So it has gotten to the point where it's constant abuse of referees because the parents want to win so bad. It almost seems like the parents are paying money for their kids to go and win trophies, not to go and develop.
Yeah. But it's kind of interesting that you wouldn't get that from what's written or talked about in the media or online or in social media. What you instead read or hear is that the coaches are the problem, that the coaches are the ones that want to win at all costs, or that the clubs are the ones that want to win at all costs. You never read articles or hear podcasts or YouTube episodes or reels where actually it's the parents, that's coming from the parents. They are the originator of the winning culture or the win at all costs thing. And look, not to throw shade at parents, I can comprehend it and understand it. Look, I've worked with parents forever, Benny. I've been over 2-3 decades in this thing. And like I mentioned before, look, they're not experts in this field. Okay. They haven't been coaching 5, 10, 15 years, high levels, medium levels, low levels. It's not their thing. And so what do you do when something's not your expertise? You go off of whatever objective metrics exist. And so the most obvious objective metric is the win-loss column. That's where you go to first. And that's the source of the issue. Now, we should probably at some point talk about promotion and relegation at the professional level and how that is the reason and the cause for all of this in our ecosystem. But before we get there, maybe let's just dig into more of what you and everyday coaches or others are experiencing at the youth level without talking macro at the pro level yet.
This is something that we talk about all the time is educating the parents. And so what do you think is the best way to educate them on the importance of development versus simply just winning games? Maybe it's a parent that's never played sports in their life and their only experience that they have is watching professional games on TV. Or so to them, maybe winning is everything. Winning is the only telltale sign that, hey, my son is getting better. My daughter's getting better. So how can you best educate the parents?
I touched on this with Rory and others previously, but it's worth repeating and ramming it over and over and over and over again. You have to catch the parents early. That's like rule number one. At the very beginning of the coach's interaction with the parents, the coach needs to lay out a comprehensive vision. And part of that comprehensive vision is having the central theme of, hey, listen, let's talk about winning and what that actually means. When is it good? When is it bad? And what is the plan here? I see, and you kind of have to lay all the cards out on the deck from the get-go, you know, that way they can't come back and later in time and say, oh, well, you didn't say X, Y, or Z, Benny or Gary or whoever. And one of those things is hopefully the coach or whoever's doing the educating has a good feel for the level of the team that they're taking over. And what I mean by that is the coach has to have a good idea of what their win-loss column is kind of going to look like, you know, 6 months down the line or 3 months down the line, certainly in the immediate term. That way you can put it out there from the get-go. Listen, guys, we're a mid-table team. Okay. So that's kind of our baseline. Sure, we're going to shoot to be a little bit above mid-table, but we're going to do things the right way. And this is the right way. And it has benefits for individual player development, for team development, for long-term development. And yes, I want to win, guys, but let's do things the right way. That way your player actually learns how to play this soccer game. So now you've set a baseline. You've put it in their head that you're a mid-level team. Don't expect to, you know, be league champions or sort of thing. And if the team is really bad for whatever reason, you say, listen, guys, I'm going to be straight with you. All the teams in our competition are better than us at this point. And I know that might sting at the moment, but that's cool. No problem. We're going to build and we're going to build. And over the course of time, we're going to start inching forward and inching forward. And over the long term, guess what's going to happen? Your son or daughter is going to end up at a much better place 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the road because of the education that they're going to receive here. So guys, when I train building out of the black, hey, you know, Johnny's going to make a mistake at some point and they're going to intercept the pass and they're going to ram it down their throats and we're going to lose 4-0 because we're doing that. Just be aware of that there's a bigger picture to all of this, you know? So I think you have to paint that picture from the get-go. That doesn't mean that your parent problems are going to go away at all, because they will somehow, some way circle it back. You know, if it's not after 2 weeks or 5 weeks or 3 months, eventually they will figure out a nook or a cranny to kind of express their concerns, if I'm being charitable. So that's step one. There's multiple steps. I just thought I wouldn't ramble on for 30 minutes here, Ben, because I could go on for 2 hours on the topic. No, that's just step one.
Sure. And it seems like even, let's say a coach is winning every single game, right? He's executing his philosophy and everything that they're working on in training. I feel like there's still going to be parents that, like you just said, are going to nitpick and So you're always going to be running into those problems as a coach, no?
Benny, it never ends and extends to the professional level. You might think that a 28-year-old professional soccer player playing at the highest levels, that you are only dealing with the player. It's not true. The parents inject themselves one way or another. Now, listen, the club's not going to put up with any parents. The coach of a professional team is not going to put up with any parents, but whoever is the interface to the player is going to be putting up with parents of a 28-year-old, okay? And look, even the super cracks, the super phenoms, Messi, Neymar, they're the representative of the player. So guess what? You're dealing with parents, dude. Mourinho is dealing with parents. And look, again, with all respect, if you followed American soccer for any period of time, there was a whole scandal, if you can call it that, with Gio Reyna's parents. Gio Reyna's parents were involved with national team stuff and club stuff, and it's a whole thing. So yeah, I hate to talk about the pro level that much because I know most of our audience is here in youth, but to bring it back to youth, let's say you're league champs and you go to a prestigious tournament and you're not the champion at the tournament, there's going to be issues. Oh, why didn't Benny Rogers, you know, start so-and-so at right back? Or oh, you should have made more subs. Or, my kid played even less playing time because we were playing against an international opponent or something. It never fucking ends, Ben, no matter what you do.
Maybe, Gary, let's dig into some of the comments of the reel. There was a lot of comments, a lot of debate. Some of them good, some of them not so much. But Mr. Martin, he says a serious question. If you're worried about your build-up patterns and passing patterns, but you are losing every game, when would it be time to reevaluate your build-out and your passing patterns?
Again, I think it depends on the... Well, okay. First and foremost, are we here to learn about soccer and have the players learn how to play football or not? That's number one. So if you want to learn how to play football and how it's supposed to be played, and people will take issue with what I just said, they're supposed to be played. Guys, look at any pro game, okay? Look at how they play. You build out, okay? You have possession. You control the football, okay? You want to give it to your partner and not give it to the other team or not gamble it. This is primordial in football. You keep the ball, don't give it to the opponent. So this is what we want to teach the players. Hey, are there times when you don't want to build out of the back and launch it forward or direct or do all these things? Absolutely, of course, but not as an overall philosophy where that is how you play football. You don't do that. That's not how you play football. You'll launch it forward if maybe, I don't know, you're being pressed like crazy and you know you can't handle it or something. Okay, maybe you change it at that point a little bit. Or what if you're winning 2-1 and there's 10 minutes left in the game? You know, don't mess around, because that's also learning how to play football. You're teaching your kids, hey, if we're winning 2-1, there's 5 minutes left in the game. Hey, let's go for the win. That's part of football. You want to win the game. So this is something that is done at the highest of levels. You don't dick around in the back. You launch it. Or hey, if there are numerical advantages up top because they're pressing us like crazy, that means we're 1v1 up high. Hey, just pick out your target and launch it forward. So there are a lot of good teaching moments, but if they are saying reevaluate your entire philosophy or your methodology or all this stuff and just resort to something else, no, I think that's dumb.
Right. And I think that's the hard part, Gary, that a lot of coaches are facing, especially youth coaches, is that you try and play this certain way, right? Keep the ball, possession soccer. You want to instill this in the kids. But then at the young ages, all it takes is the center back launching a ball forward and you have one phenom up top that can just go and score massive goals. You know, so I think not just for parents, but also coaches, you have to have your own definition of winning. For me, when it's I'm versing a team like that, for me, I define winning as, did my team properly execute what we were working on in training? Did we keep possession of the ball? Did we have a 10 pass sequence? And so for me, those are the things that I check. And again, winning is going to become a byproduct of that. But at the younger ages, it's hard when you have physical players that can just, you know, take over the game themselves, meaning it's one super phenom up top. And listen, the other team, maybe they didn't connect one pass the entire game, but they could still win 5-0 because they have that one or two guys that just takes over, you know? So I think that's a dilemma that a lot of coaches are facing.
Yeah. Well, the other thing to assess too, I mean, if you're getting slaughtered in league and this is happening to you all the time, maybe it's worth considering you shouldn't be in that league. You're not at that competitive level quite yet, sincerely. And if the goal here is to teach the players how to play and for them to get better and better and better and better, maybe you drop a level so that you do have success in what is being trained and the players can experience success in playing, quote unquote, the right way. But unfortunately, you know, parents don't want to hear that. The parents, you don't want to tell your parents, oh, listen, we're going to enter a bronze tournament instead of the more prestigious, you know, silver bracket or something like that. But this also has to be part of the parent education process, you know, at the very beginning. That is also another line or philosophy that should be repeated to the parents ad nauseum is, hey, we want the kids to experience success. That's how they're going to learn. Success in build out, success in possession, success in how to play soccer. So to achieve that goal, we need to play teams that are at our level or actually, frankly, many times for a certain period of time, below our level so we can actually execute. So let's not always be pushing. Oh, let's see if we can get into the highest level of tournament possible. And then you're just going to get spanked and you're not going to be able to execute and the kids aren't going to learn and confidence is going to tank and it's just a disaster at that point. So that's one of the potential remedies to that situation, Benny. If you're competing against man-childs, it just means that you yourself don't have man-childs, which means that you yourself, your roster probably is overmatched.
I do agree, Gary, but I think there are some coaches who maybe take advantage of that, meaning that they could potentially compete in a flight one or flight two environment, right? Nowadays, I'm sure, as you know, it's called flight one, flight two. Back in the day, I know it was bronze and silver and gold. And
sure.
You actually had to get promoted to go. Nowadays, as a coach, you can message the league and say, hey, this is the flight that I want to play in, right? So I think some coaches do take advantage of that, meaning, again, they could be playing in flight one or flight two, but what do they care about? Making the parents happy and wanting to win. And so what are they going to do? They're going to enroll their team in the lowest flight. And guess what? They win every single game. And so for those parents, yeah, it's probably like, wow, this coach is amazing. This team is amazing, right? Sure. But if you're actually competing against people that are at the same level as you, I don't think you'd see the same thing.
Yeah, well, everyone to their own. I'm just speaking to the coaches who want to do the right thing. It's like, hey, this is one way to do the right thing. Drop down a level so that you can actually play the right way. Don't drop down a level so that then you can launch it to your guy. And now your guy is more athletic than their guy and do the same thing that those other guys do.
Here's another good comment, Gary, that I think aligns pretty well with this. Duke has G. He says, when coaches say they don't care about winning and it's only about development, it's because they cannot win. It's less about winning doesn't matter and more about what are you willing to sacrifice in order to win. If you are willing to sacrifice your principles to win, then it's a problem. At the end of the day, you're trying to develop players so they can eventually win. So the two things aren't mutually exclusive.
Yeah, they go hand in hand. Read that first sentence, though, because I really want to mention some things along those lines, because it's a very good point. Go ahead.
When coaches say they don't care about winning and it's only about development, it's because they cannot win.
Okay, just stop right there. Very good point. Very good point. I think a huge percentage of coaches are actually playing that game of, you know, because parents hear about it in the media all the time. Oh, it's all about development. It's not about winning. Winning shouldn't matter, la, 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 or whatever. And so these coaches take advantage of that. And, you know, one angle is to try to win at all costs to keep the parents happy. The other angle, the cowardly angle, or the angle of somebody who, and not in a derogatory way, is incompetent in the craft, their angle is having discussions with the parents and brainwashing the parents that winning doesn't matter at all. And it's all about development and they can't develop shit, Benny. Okay. And they know they can't develop shit. And so they are forced to say that to the parents and try to have that sort of philosophy because since they can't develop, since they don't know how to train a team, since they don't know how to win, they aren't going to win. So what choice does that coach have? Coach X. Coach X has to choose what the guy just said. He has to go through the AYSO mentality. Is all about development, guys. Who cares about winning? So yeah, it's a very good point. I agree.
Yeah. So what you're saying is basically Coach X can't tell his parents like, hey, winning does matter. because every single game they're going to lose, right?
Correct. And so here is the conundrum that I haven't been able to solve yet, which is the origin of the 343 Masterclass, which is all about parent education. It's a product for parents. So the onus, unfortunately, lies on the parents to be able to discern which coach do you actually have. Because if you have a coach that's saying, hey, who cares if we lose? We're trying to develop. You as a parent have to be able to tell, is this coach the hack who can't win and doesn't know what the fuck he's doing? And that's why he's telling me it's not about winning. Or is this coach somebody who knows their shit and I need to trust them and trust their process? That's very difficult. Which one are you though, Benny?
For me, winning does matter. I mean, I think everybody wants to win, but I think it's about how you go about winning. Like, for example, I don't just go and recruit super phenoms or mega athletes that can go and run, right? I want to coach players that love the game and care about the game. To me, it doesn't matter their size, how big or fast they are. I think if somebody who truly loves the game, they can be coached. But for me, it's about how I go about winning. And listen, as you know, I've been influenced a lot by 343 since I was 11 years old. So now, obviously, as a coach, I want to create players that are technically proficient, high soccer IQ. And I think doing all those things, it brings winning. But at the end of the day, my ultimate goal isn't to win every single game. My goal is to create, and I work with very young players. And so one, I want to instill love for the game for them, because I think too, a lot of coaches that put the emphasis only on winning at the young ages, the players can easily get burned out. But yeah, I personally want to see the kids grow and develop. And of course, you know, any game that I coach, I'm going to be competing to win. I'm not there to just be on the sideline and say, oh, whatever happens, happens. Or if it's a loss, fantastic job, guys. You did a great job. No, like if we worked on something in training and it wasn't there in the game, then I'm not going to say great job team for losing 5-0 today. Or hey, you made a great effort today. I'm going to tell them, look, these are all the things that we're working on in training and we're not executing them, you know? But of course, do I want to win every game that I coach? 100% I want to win.
Yeah.
And what makes me want to win more too is that I see that the kids want to win as well. You know, to them, it matters. To them, it matters. At the end of the game, if it's a hard fought game, we lost at the last second, last minute goal, the kids are in tears, you know, and it shows that they do care about it. And the funny thing too is, Gary, like, U.S. soccer or SoCal soccer, I should say, in the 7v7 age groups, they'll post the scores of the games, but they don't post standings, right? Once you get to 9v9, then they'll post the standings. But just that simple fact, it's okay. Obviously, SoCal soccer's view is, does winning matter at the youth ages? No, it doesn't. It's about development. You know what I mean? So I think that's very, even if they don't post the standings, like the kids know, right? Oh, we lost to this team, but we beat all these other teams. We're probably in second place, right? So I think the kids really do care about winning. You know what I mean?
Benny, it's a game. It's played to win. It literally has goals on either side of the field where you are supposed to score and prevent the other person from scoring, okay? That is the game. Whether you're playing cards or whatever it is, the game is played to win. Why are we running away from that? It's ridiculous that there aren't standings. Soft, super soft, just like our overall American culture these days. Soft, soft all over the place. Yes, winning matters a ton. I was just asking, like, if you had those conversations with the parents that we've been describing so far, the parent education component. And I guess I'm curious from your end, how has it gone if you have had those conversations and if those conversations have evolved over the course of your coaching career, because you've been coaching a good chunk of years at this point.
I've always tried to have the conversations early, Gary. And in my early coaching career, I was fortunately blessed to kind of just inherit teams that just won. You know, there was, like we talked about earlier, there's 3 or 4 kids on my teams that were just better than any of the kids in the age group. And so in those moments, it was easy for me to tell the parents, hey, look, winning isn't everything, but we're going to compete. We're going to try our best. We're going to aim to develop your sons or daughters. And the conversation's always been great. I never had a parent leave because the team wasn't winning. You know what I mean? Now, I made the transition to a different club recently and it wasn't stopped the same, right? The players are a lot lower level and I had to have that conversation with the parents. And now listen, I'm only 5 to 6 months into it with these teams. And we're only halfway through our first season together as a team. And I'll tell you, both teams have not won a single game. Both of them have played five games. They've lost every single game. But because I talked with the parents before the season, the same thing that you just said, right? Every other team that we're competing against is better than us. That's just, it may hurt to hear, but that's just the reality of it. But the thing that I love is that the boys have responded in a really good way, meaning that they know that all these teams are better than them, but they still continue to show up to training. They're working their ass off. The kids are hungry to get their first win. You know what I mean? And so having those conversations with the parents before the season, I told them straight up, listen, we may lose every single game this year. I don't want to lose. I want to win just as much as you do, but that's the reality of it. And all of the parents on my teams right now have been more than supportive, more than understanding. They come up to me after the game and say, hey, coach, I know we didn't win, but the boys just made 7 passes in a row. They've never done that before. These teams have been together 3 years and we've never seen anything like this. So keep doing what you're doing. And I think this is something for parents too. Like anytime that you can support your coach in little ways like that, letting them know like, hey, I see what you're doing or I have your back. It goes a long way more than you realize. Right. But I'm blessed right now with the parents and the teams that I have. Every single one of them is more than supportive. You know, they're all hungry. Like at our last training last week, they're like, oh, I can feel it in the air, coach. Our first win's coming soon.
You know, what's amazing, Benny, and they've even made movies about this sort of scenario. What's amazing is when the kid, how old are they again?
They're 8 and 9 years old.
Okay. So like I was saying, they've even made movies about this sort of scenario. When they get their first win, it's going to be so incredibly glorious, more glorious, in fact, more glorious than what the kids who are winning the league or a title are going to feel. More, the high is going to be even higher than those other people. Right. And so much so that it's going to last a lifetime with them. And it's going to be a good memory and it's going to be good lessons that are learned from it, way more so than the guys that won the title. Unless the guys who won the title had to go through extraordinary lengths to get there, you know? But if it's just a team that's just ultra talented and way better than everybody else and they're going to win it no matter what, then those players are like, nah, okay, I guess we won again, you know, whoop-de-doo. Right.
No, it's hilarious, Gary. And 2 weeks ago, we had a game and I think we were losing, I don't know, like 5-2 or something like that. But it was the last play of the game and the other team has a breakaway. And my goalie makes a save like fucking like Debo in the World Cup final, like last second save. but then he makes another save and then another kid makes like a heroic goal line clearance. And like the ref blows a whistle for the final score. And all my kids are like, they're celebrating like they just won the game, G. Like, let's go. You know, the other team's like, what are you guys celebrating for? That's awesome. But like those little moments, like, dude, the kids are hungry to win, dude. And I see that. And that's honestly what pushes me to keep going, you know? And from day one, when I seen them until now, they have made so much progress, Gary. And it's as a coach, that's why we do it, because you want to see the development of the kids. You want to see them enjoy the game. And it's a good feeling when you can see that. Now, would it be a better feeling if we've won every single game? 100% it would be. And maybe the boys will be a different type of motivated, right? But they're fucking hungry. And kids, they read social cues from adults. And so if the parents are wanting to win, the coach wants to win, the club directors want to win, obviously they're going to want to win too. You know what I mean? But let me ask you this, Gary. So obviously, I just told you, my teams are 8 years old, 9 years old. What about when a kid first starts playing soccer? At 4 years old, 5 years old, they're playing 4v4. Like, should the results of those games matter?
Remember how we started the conversation about my opinions and ideas and views are from experience. So now you're asking me something that goes beyond my experience. The youngest I have any experience or any touch point with is, that 8 to 9 year old sort of range. So if you're telling me 4v4 and they're 5 or something like that, look, I can give you an opinion, but again, my opinion is going to be based on theory, like all these non-practitioners have their theories. And if you're asking me for that, okay, I guess I would just say the platitude that, hey, you know, at that age, just make sure that they enjoy what it is that they're doing, you know, that they fall in love with the ball, those sorts of feel good things. and have them touch the ball as much as possible, you know, and I think the parents are very important in this respect, you know, make sure maybe the parents play with them a little bit themselves. And, you know, so by the time they're 8 or 9, then maybe they're ready for a step up and actually start introducing the element of competition a bit. So that's what I would say. But again, I'm basing that off of theory and not experience. Now, here's more theory for you. I know, like in Uruguay and in Argentina, it's warfare all the way down to the cradle. Okay. Win at all costs, all the way down to the cradle there. And there's pros and cons, obviously. And everybody, I'm sure, here in the soft American culture would cite all the cons to that. And all the professional international players from South America and Europe would say all the pros associated with it, because when they encounter Uruguayans or Argentinians, which is the two that I just cited, you can go down the list. Everybody else says they have that extra gear in them where it's kind of the win at all costs, no matter what it takes. And that usually makes a big difference when the margins are razor thin. And so that's why Uruguayans and Argentinians have that special extra gear in them, because they were at war since the age of 4. And if the 5-year-old or the 7-year-old or the 8-year-old came in second place in a national, international competition, they're crying because they didn't win the title.
Here, it's like, you got second place, they're going to throw a parade for you in your hometown city.
Pizza party, dude. At least when I was a kid, it was pizza. Let's go to the pizza party. Let's go to Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah. You got third place, or we're going all out Chuck E. Cheese. Let's go.
When I was growing up, third place actually had a trophy still, right? It was first place, second place, like kind of like the Olympics, you know, first, second, third place, but now it's
15th place. You still get a trophy.
Yeah. Now everybody gets medals. Everybody gets trophies. Everybody gets pizza parties, whatever. What are you going to do, man? But, yeah, what else? So maybe read off another comment. I cut you off at
that point. No. And this guy is kind of saying exactly what we're saying. So this guy, based off his Instagram name, DOC Joshi. So I don't know who he is, but I'm assuming he's maybe the DOC of a club. This is what he says. He says, the concept of competition is important. It's also important that the kids enjoy their time at the club. If they're constantly losing, it's going to be disheartening. Whether we like it as coaches and parents, that's a fact. They need to play at the right level, enjoy themselves, learn about the game and how to improve, and also learn about competition, winning and losing as a team. How to win well and lose well, respect for opponents and respect for themselves. It's not all about winning, and any coach who tries to win every game is aiming to the wrong thing. But any coach that says they couldn't care less if their team loses every game doesn't actually understand the kids themselves. The kids keep track of the scores even if we don't. And they don't want to lose every game they play. There's a healthy balance between what this coach is saying, which is Rory, and the coaches that he is apparently describing.
Yeah. So, okay, great. All good comments. I think I agree basically with the whole sentiment there. It's just, all right. Easier said than done, though. That's great. I mean, my head goes straight to theory. Okay. These are all theoretical points. I like them all. Now, good luck implementing all of that. That's where the expertise and the craft and the art come into play, and things get dirty because it's not that easy.
So another guy's De La Rocha Coaching. He says the game itself is about winning. Development is not about everybody gets a medal, nor is it about caring about winning. The game is for the players to try to win. Youth coaches train and assist their players to improve their abilities and inabilities and allow them to compete come match day. The game itself is a tool to help the players develop in the midst of trying to win. But many coaches are incompetent that they coach to exploit the result as an objective in itself, rather using the match to help their players learn and gather information to their progress. So kind of align what you were saying, Gary, right? It's the game is about winning. There's two goals on the field, right? And he also says many coaches are incompetent that they coach to exploit the result as an objective in itself.
Yeah, well, I don't know exactly what they mean by that. I mean, some things come to my mind. Do some things come to your mind? Maybe you can cite what comes to your mind and I can react to it.
Yeah. I think what he means is what we already said is Coach X. He can't say that winning is everything because they're not going to win every game. He knows they're going to lose every game. So he's saying that they coach to exploit the result, meaning that, okay, if like we just said, Coach X tells the parents, hey, guess what, guys? Winning doesn't matter. We're not going to win every single game.
Okay. Or they exploit the, if you're a winning coach, you exploit the result by kind of.
Right.
Yeah. indoctrinating that, see, I'm a phenomenal coach because the team wins all the time. The parents has no idea that it's one of the most shocking coaches in the entire ecosystem. But
right.
throw them the talent, and the worst coach in the entire ecosystem will win trophies. So they'll exploit the result for sure. I know countless such folks for sure.
Right.
But look, Ben. And I don't know, maybe we can continue with some comments, but I just feel tempted so often to inject the professional soccer ecosystem here in America and the way it's structured. And that is why we have all of these controversies and all of these issues at the youth system. We have all the issues that are being talked about here at the youth system. If we're talking about winning, the pressure to win, incentive to win, all these or development, all that stuff, because the professional level here is closed and monopolized. That is why all of this shit fucking exists. But we don't have to go there now, Ben, if you want to read off more comments.
No. Let's go there now and I'll come back to the comments. But to steal your own words, Gary, from my favorite video, The Problem with Soccer in America,
you should probably play it.
I will. I'll play the video. But you do say there's no incentive for coaches to be great. There's no incentive for players to be great. Why? Because, okay, you look at the top league in America, MLS, winning doesn't fucking matter. You can lose every game and you're still going to be in the league next year. Winning only matters when you make it to the playoffs. But guess what? Oh, we came in last place this year. The team on social media will post, oh, tough season, but we'll bounce back next year. So for the lower levels, if it's a closed system, right? A coach for Strikers FC or Slammers FC, there's no pathway from your club at the bottom to get to the top. So why would you even be incentivized to compete and be great? That's your thought, because I know you can probably go off for 30 minutes about this topic.
Yeah, and I know it's all about the episodes about winning versus development, as if they were two different things. So maybe I won't go off for 3 hours on promotion relegation at the pro level, even though that is the problem, but maybe just to tie it with the winning side of the equation. Well, one, I think you made a good point, right? If at MLS, you come in last place and it doesn't matter and you're still in the league in the first division next year, then you can understand and appreciate that the incentive, the drive to win at all levels isn't the same intensity, even remotely the same intensity as it is in other countries. And that develops an entire culture of mediocrity here in the United States. So if the culture at the highest levels, which is what everybody's looking to, Benny, if the culture is a culture of mediocrity, a culture of being soft, a culture of no accountability, a culture of low pressure, all of those sorts of elements, then that culture does trickle down to the lower levels. Of course it does. I mean, the biggest microphones in American soccer, naturally, just like everywhere else, is at the highest levels. They have the biggest media platforms. They have the biggest visibility on television and streaming and on YouTube and on social media. So you are being fed that. And whether you like it or not, you are assimilating a culture of mediocrity and of being a loser, and that winning's not that important. Okay. That aside, since there's no promotion relegation at the professional level, there is at scale, there aren't clubs at every level trying to develop players for their first team. So you coach at a certain youth club, and the fact that I'm even saying, or we say here in America, youth club in quotes, is very telling. Instead of just saying a club, no, we have to say youth club, because guess what? You don't have a first team, an adult team, a pro team. So you have to delineate that. You have to have that distinction there. Everything changes with promotion relegation, because you wouldn't necessarily be a youth club. You would just be a club that has a first team. Maybe your first team sucks ass and is in the fifth tier, sixth tier, eighth tier, 10th tier, or whatever it is, but you have a first team. But that changes the dynamics at the youth level already, because guess what? That club is going to have an incentive to develop players for its first team, because it doesn't have the resources or anything to go out and purchase players. No, you got to develop it internally. And then you also have the youth players throughout the structure of that club looking up to the first team and saying, man, it'd be cool if I could play for that team one day. So now all of a sudden the coach and the club itself has more of an incentive alignment for player development, Without that incentive, and it gets even better, right? If your first team is in the second division, imagine if you're in the USL Championship and the champion and the second place team get promoted to MLS, guess what? They're going to go gangbusters doing everything possible to identify youth talent, to identify the best coaches, to identify the best club directors, to identify investors, to identify just everything such that they can earn promotion to the first division. And the same goes from the third division to the second division, the fourth division to the third division, and so on and so forth. And it spreads like a weed throughout the country. So you, Benny, as a coach within your club, there is a pathway for you now. What if you are the best coach at your club? You might take over the first team. And again, the first team might not be MLS. It might be in the fourth division or the third division or the second division. But now you've injected an incentive to the coaches in the youth ranks to do awesome work. So that's just a tip of the iceberg talk, you know, Ben. This is volumes of things that can be unpacked and for people to comprehend. And I've done a terrible job of doing that. And it's frankly because I just don't have the time. If I had the time, I would sit down, take a year or 2 years off and just break it all down for everybody and write a book or write two books or create it, do something much, much better than what we've done to this date. But that is the root of it all.
So coaches in Europe or coaches in Latin America where the system is open, they obviously have every incentive to be great, to be the best coach, to have your team win, right? Winning does matter in those systems here, right? Again, we just said it, you can lose every single game and you're still going to be eligible to play next, or you're still going to be in the same league. And so I think you're right, Gary. I think it's kind of trickle down economics. Is that the right way to put it? Right from the top, there's no incentive to compete, to win, right? Yep. And so there's complacency that exists within youth soccer in America.
The fact of the matter is that here in American soccer, it is a transactional relationship, you know, at the youth levels. The parents pay and they expect their kids to play, have fun, and win. And if one of those three are off balance, there's a problem. If two of those three are off balance, there's a bigger problem. If three of three are off, then you have a catastrophe waiting on your hands.
Say the three again, Gary.
Yeah, the three are the parents pay for their kid to play, enjoy themselves, and win. All three. If any of the, look, pick any one of the three. If it's off, you're going to have an issue. If the team is winning and if the kid is playing 90 minutes, but for whatever reason, he's not enjoying himself, it could be a whole host of reasons. I'm sure you've come across certain scenarios, then you have an issue. And if the kid's not playing, of course you have an issue. And if the team is not winning, but your kid is playing 90 minutes and he's the star, there's an issue. Because guess what? That parent's going to say, my kid's the best player or one of the best players. The team loses every game. I need my kid to go to a winning team now.
Do you think that's a mistake, Gary? Let's say the coach is a follower of 3-4-3. He's trying to implement all these things, possession soccer, playing the right way, trying to create technically proficient players. The parent of the best kid on the team, right? They're not winning so much. Do you think the parent should say, okay, you know what? My kid's not enjoying it. They're not winning. Let me go and take them somewhere else. Or should they stick it out in that environment? Because again, a lot of parents aren't educated as to what is good soccer education.
Like everything, it depends. The most immediate thing that comes to my mind, Benny, is at that point, the reputation of the coach and the reputation of the club. So on one extreme end, let's say the coach has an incredible reputation, awesome, you know, huge track record, ton of experience, revered in the community, nationally even, and the team's not a winning team, let's say, but that you have that element. And let's say that the club that the team is at is similarly revered, prestigious, a huge history and track record, pedigree up the butt, then okay, I think in that case, I think the decision is to stay. I don't care if the team's not a winning team. Maybe it's under 500, lower half of the table or something. You stay, especially if the coach is good, right? If one of those two things are off, the club isn't prestigious and blah, 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 and the coach is great. Okay, it's not as strong of a case at that point. But maybe you stay again. You stick it out for another year because maybe your kid is learning a lot of things. And if you don't have either of those, Benny, unfortunately, you can't do worse by going elsewhere. You know what I mean? Right. So that's how I see it.
I'm curious because I know that majority of the teams that Brian, almost all of the teams that Brian's had were successful, won a lot of major tournaments. But at the end of the day, there were still players that left Brian's team. So what were the reasons that those parents left? Was it playing time? Was it?
Well, I'm trying to think of the players, and the ones that always come to mind are the ones who weren't protagonists on the team. So they weren't, you know, because Brian's teams were very good players. Okay. And so imagine that there's a player who's also very good relative to the local scene, very good player, but just not good enough, you know, to crack the starting lineup. So imagine that scenario that you know that if you go to any other team that is also very good, not as good as Brian's, but very, very good, that your kid's going to be the starter and playing 90 minutes and, you know, and all that stuff. So those are the scenarios that pop into my head as to when players left. That's usually kind of like the case.
Do you ever recall a time where maybe Brian had to sacrifice his team identity in order to win a game? Let's say, like, for example, we talked about it earlier, if a team is fantastic at pressing you, they're high pressing you, they're organized. Was there ever a time when it became like, all right, let's change it up?
Yeah. You know what's interesting about the question? I would change the question, or I would answer it this way. I don't think the identity was ever sacrificed, ever. And let me explain. So if Brian encountered an opponent where the opponent was superior, clearly superior, and you knew the team was superior, for instance, his girls' teams, which also did incredible stuff, right? With two girls going to University of North Carolina, one of them going on to be a very good professional player, Brooke Elby. The other one was Taylor Ramirez, who went to North Carolina. So very successful, but the roster he had as a whole was clearly overmatched many, many times. And so, yeah, you know, you train throughout the week to park the bus and counter, you know, but that is part of, and I guess I'm speaking for Brian at this point, but you would have to speak to him. I'll speak for myself. That was part of the identity. Part of the identity is, look, we want to play like Pep Guardiola's Barcelona or Man City, and that's how we develop the players and so on and so forth. But if we find somebody that is 100 million times superior to you, we might deploy this game plan. And guess what? It's part of the player development puzzle. Because players need to know when you're overmatched, how can you actually figure out a way to neutralize your opponent and give yourself a chance to win the game? It's part of player development. So I look at it as never sacrificing the identity because we view that as part of our identity. So I don't know where to take it from here. Look, does winning matter? Fuck yeah, it matters. Fuck yeah, it matters. Does development matter? Well, of course, that's what we're here for, okay? We're trying to make players better, make the team better, because even if you think the coach is evil or bad or something like that, well, and only wants to win, well, if he wants to make his players better, because he knows if he makes his players better, they're going to win. Now, whether the coach has the chops to make them better is another story. So winning fucking matters, Benny. Developing players fucking matter. This whole thing of winning versus development is stupidity.
And some may see this phrase as like a cop-out too, but I want to hear your thoughts on it. It's like losing can make you a better player, or it can teach you life lessons on the field.
Yeah, I think that's very beneficial. I look at it in the broader scope of life. Failing is very beneficial. You fail, you're kind of forced to reflect and try to determine and deduce why you failed. And it's a learning process. If you win all the time, you don't get that opportunity to reflect and see what you do good and what you do bad. You just think everything is fine. And then you're less equipped maybe down the line if you're always winning, 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 not just talking soccer, I'm talking life. And then life slaps you across the face. You don't know how to handle that slap across the face because you've never really experienced it all that often or much at all. So of course, failure matters, man. That's when we learn the most. That's the cliche. That is the thing that you always hear, you know, all over the place. And it's true.
Yeah, for sure, Gary. And one thing to keep in mind, especially for coaches that are youth coaches, right, is obviously every coach, they want their kids to go as far as possible, right? And the ultimate dream or goal is to go and play professional. But something I came across the other day is like 1 in 16,000 kids or high school athletes go pro. So at the end of the day, it's like many coaches are going to coach thousands of kids that will never go pro. And so what are you really trying to get out of this whole experience, right? Life lessons on the field can be taught. Life lessons can be learned through wins, through losses, through hardships, you know? So for me as a coach, I really try and instill good qualities in my players that are going to make them good human beings, not just on the field, but off the field too. Because at the end of the day, it's only 1 in 16,000 kids that are going to go pro. That's not a lot of kids, you know? So majority of the kids that most coaches coach will never go pro or even go on to play college soccer. So I think this whole discussion of does winning matter? Like we just said, of course it matters. But I think also there's lessons that can be learned through losing, through winning. And it's a really cool thing as a coach, especially when you have players come back that you maybe coached 7, 8 years ago. Now that I'm getting older as a coach, to say, hey, coach, thank you for what you taught me in terms of life, in terms of off the field stuff, in terms of stuff isn't always going to go your way. Right? You're not always going to win every single game, but it's how you bounce back. It's how you learn from those failures.
Yeah, Benny, look, you guys are teachers and you have, especially at the youth level, you have massive impact on the future of these humans, and they're very impressionable. And the memories that you're forging, the experiences that you're forging literally last a lifetime. You've shared it on many occasions that Brian has marked you, your experiences at the youth with Brian have marked you, and there are things there that will carry you until you're 60, 70, 80, and you're gone. And so it's a huge responsibility that you have on your shoulders. And yeah, not everybody's going to make it pro or be a D1 athlete or even a college athlete at all, or even play, maybe not even play in your high school team. Who knows? But it matters, dude. You know, I've been teaching at the university level for a very long time now. And I recently, at the beginning of the year, just had a former student reach out to me again. And you know this, Benny, because I was sharing it with you a while ago. He got his PhD from Princeton Engineering and, you know, reached out. He started a company, is starting another company. He wants me to be a part of it. And he shared a lot of his experiences for being my student. And even at his age, when he was my student, I guess he was 20 years old or 19 or 21. I forget at this point. They marked him, you know, and it's 10 years later and he still remembers details, you know, of our chats in my office or in chats after lectures or those sorts of things. So the reward is there, Ben. Yes, you want everybody to reach the highest levels possible, but the reward is in seeing light bulb moments of the humans that have trusted you with your guidance. And I don't know, man, I feel like that's in and of itself, a reason to coach or a reason to teach.
It's rewarding for sure. It's rewarding. I think maybe a good way to wrap this up, Gary, is to me, it's funny. It's like in the US, right? The US wants to be the best at everything, right? The space race, technology.
We used to.
Right, right. But, and it's funny because you see like MLB or NBA, NFL, they win their league and it's like the world champions, right? But in terms of soccer, the winners of the MLS Cup are not the world champions. You know what I mean? And so I think it's funny that in our culture, everybody strives to be the best, except when it comes to athletics, right? Or especially soccer. Because let's face it, I mean, in the NFL, I think, okay, the team wins a Super Bowl, they're world champions. I don't think any other country could put together a team and beat them. But
because they don't fucking play the game, bro. They don't fucking play the game. So, right.
if they did, they maybe would compete with us even better.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Everybody here says, oh, well, Gary, look at NBA and look at NFL and look at the Major League Baseball. They're the best in the world, you know, and they don't have promotion relegation. Yeah, motherfucker, because the rest of the world doesn't fucking play those fucking games. It's like I invent my own fucking game here in my house. I invite my friend Benny and Danny and Brian and everybody, and we just play amongst ourselves, and I can claim myself the world champion because nobody in the rest of the world fucking plays the game I just invented. Okay, but check this out. If the rest of the world played the game, you will be exposed. The NFL would be exposed as less than optimal. The NBA would be, actually, the NBA is already being exposed. Like, many of the best players in the NBA aren't even born, bred, and developed in the United States. They're overseas at this point. So imagine, oh, NBA, best in the world. Yes, it still is the best in the world. But why are you importing so many foreigners to the NBA? And why are so many foreigners among the best players in the fucking league if we're the best here at basketball? So think about it for a second. Maybe, just maybe, it's because the rest of the world has an open ecosystem, a competitive meritocratic sports ecosystem, and that just develops way better than over here. Here it's closed. Here it's gatekeeper driven. It's subjective. Who does the gatekeeper think is the best? Number one. And two, there's a lot of non-sporting merit associated with picking somebody or elevating somebody. There's a lot of ancillary reasons to, you want to do a friend a favor, you want to do the player a favor, we want to elevate this guy because he'd be a good face for the league, you know, versus this other guy, so on and so forth.
Well, it's kind of aligned too with everybody used to say, like, oh, the U.S. men's team should follow after the women's team, right? Because they've had so much success, they won the World Cup. But the fact of the matter is that any of the other countries didn't even start playing soccer until recently.
Nobody gave a shit about women's football.
Right. But now that other countries do care about it, now you're seeing the downfall of the U.S. soccer women's team, and you're seeing the rise of other, Spain, Japan, Germany, right? All of these teams surpassing what we were and what we could become.
Sure. And look, some people are now immediately rebut, oh, look, with Emma Hayes, it's because we had a bad coach and now we have this good coach, right? And now the women is back on top of the mountain. Guys, it's not a straight downward spiral to being terrible. Okay. It's a, you know, down a little bit, up again. Down a little bit, up again, but the trend is down. Make no mistake about it. The rest of the world has closed the gap significantly, and just give it some more time. And if things don't change in this country, the women's national team, soccer national team, will be at the same level that the U.S. men's national team is at. It's inevitable. That is what's going to happen.
Crazy.
Benjamin Rogers, winning. Hey, winning matters. I like winning. I don't like losing, dude. Losing is for losers. Have you ever seen that reel, dude, where the kid, maybe like 7, 9, 8 year olds or whatever, they're, you know, they're sitting down and the baseball coach, the t-ball coach, is giving them a little pep talk. You know, I don't know if it's beginning, middle, or I have no idea. He's like, yeah, and if your dad tells you that winning doesn't matter, la la la, it's because your dad's a loser.
Hey, I bet you that team went on to win every game that year.
I don't know, bro. But it was hilarious. And I think it came out during like peak cancel culture years, which was a handful of years ago. So it's like, ooh, like, wow, you better not retweet that or share that because you'll be canceled too. You know what I mean? Is that why?
No, for sure. And Gary, I bet you too, Gary, like maybe a couple months later, a year later, the league probably saw that video and probably fired the coach. Like, hey, this is not what you should be telling our kids.
For sure. Well, it does kind of suck that you tell a kid that their dad's a loser. Yeah. Oh, but I'm not going to lie, dude. I laughed at that so hard. And I think we're living through, maybe we can end on this. I think we are living through, as generally speaking, that whole expression of strong men create great times. Great times create weak men. Weak men create weak times or bad times. And then, you know, that's the resurgence of strong men all over again. So I know I botched that a bit, but I want to be optimistic that we're going to, I don't know, fulfill this cycle, because for too long, the culture here has been soft in every respect. And soccer is no exception. They say soccer is a reflection of your society. And okay, I think that's true here in the United States for sure. We've been very, very soft as a society. And that is how our soccer is. So hopefully we turn it around.
The video I sent you, I don't know, it was last Friday or something about, I forget which team it was, MLS team. And it's like some stupid ass chant that they're doing. But the comments, Gary, on the thing, it's like, dude. And it's funny because like the whole world is aligned. Like, oh, we're sending hate from London or sending hate from Tunisia.
Never won a cup,
Bro. It was so bad. I didn't know. I've seen some bad things. Okay. Like,
right.
Like the Seattle Sounder guy who always they make a meme of from many years back where he's like, fight and win, you know, some dork, you know, is like leading the chant. But yeah, the one you sent me, I don't know if it's worse, but it's there. So embarrassing, bro.
It's sad to say, but it's kind of inspiring to see that everybody, not just here in the US, but everybody in the world agrees, like, what the fuck is wrong with MLS right now?
Well, it's a clown show. And you know, you want players to feel pride for the crest and for the club and stuff. And if you're a professional athlete, or if you're a competitor at all, if you have a competitive bone in your body and you're part of an organization, and that is what you see that your organization is like or represents, you die inside. You die inside. And just imagine the contrast or the comparisons. Like if you're in Italy with one of their supporter groups, their ultras, who are holding the players and coach and president and everybody accountable for their behavior in a very serious manner. Imagine the pressure that you feel as a player to represent your colors and that badge over there versus the quote unquote pressure of representing the Columbus Crew here. When this is the culture that exists from your supporters. Seriously? It's just so bad. It's just so bad. Benny, it's like embarrassing to be a part of an institution or an organization where this is the culture. I wouldn't be able to tolerate it.
100%. And you know what's interesting, Gary? Well, one last thing I'll say is when I was a kid, I remember going to the Galaxy games. And back then, I think they still have it, the Riot Squad. But back in the day, when I was a kid, 15, 16 years ago, the Riot Squad had that mean ass chants like towards the referee, like, oh, who's your father, referee? You're a bastard, things like that. And now, like with cancel culture, like every little bit of that has gone away. You know, now I'm not saying like, do the fans need to go and call the referee a bastard in their song? No, but the rest of the world does it. The rest of the world has that culture of we'll do anything we can to help our team win. And here in the US, it's off.
Well, Benny, we're better than that. We're elevated. We're the next generation of humans. We're progressive. You guys are Neanderthals. You know, you guys can't control your lizard brain or your monkey brain. We're better than you. And that's why we're so much more civilized. You know, in the meantime, they're literally going out in their own ways, in their own techniques to kill people's livelihoods, trash people's reputations. I mean, they don't go out there and do what you describe, but they have their own ways of expressing their lizard brain, their monkey ways, their Neanderthal ways to elevate themselves and suppress others. So again, soccer is a proxy for social, political, economic, and cultural issues. That is what soccer is around the world. And there is a lot of that catching on here in the States. And I think that the MLS and monopoly culture in general is trying to suppress that, because if they let that catch fire, then people are going to be held accountable, and they don't want that.
Really quick, your next prediction for the next 5 years of MLS. It seems like there's been a lot of talk of influential people in soccer, influential, saying that we need promotion relegation. So do you think we're heading that way?
We are headed that way, but it's a lot longer than 5 years. It's all a function of how educated the fan base is. And until we hit critical mass there, and that is something that I don't have visibility into. I don't know when that is. Mm-hmm. Until we hit critical mass, the radical change isn't going to happen. Critical mass, this is a huge conversation, Benny, but critical mass helps give strength and power to people with large platforms and large voices to actually spill the beans and actually take action.
Well, it's like that Berhalter got fired, right? Because the public wanted it.
For sure, 100%. That's why we got Pochettino, because of the critical mass that existed and the pressure that was built up by that critical mass. So that's the key to everything, Ben. And I don't know how long that takes, and I don't necessarily know exactly how we get there, but doing this podcast is one tiny blip that is required. Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches. You can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.